Welcome in, BMAS and Beamer, Brian Mazeroski, Joe Beamer here with you on WBEN. Joe, happy to be back here with you.
Hey, Brian, welcome back. Glad that you are back here with us on this Wednesday, already 4 days into the new year.
Yeah, a long drive later, which I will get to at some point. You are crazy for doing all these drives that I... At some point, we'll unpack that. But first, we're going to go live to Cincinnati. Alan Skaya is with KRLD, and he is in Cincinnati, and it's been kind of watching this story unfold, and he joins us live on the line now. Alan, first off, thanks so much for being with us, and I just want to start with what brought you into Cincinnati in the first place, and what have you been doing over the last 48 hours or so?
I grew up in Dayton, a few miles up the road, and so I was actually still home for Christmas. And the family and I, we were watching the Bengals-Bills game on Monday night, just having a good time. And then we saw what happened, and that's you sort of go back into reporter mode after that. And so, yeah, the station and the network, they sent me down to Cincinnati. I've been kind of spending time with the media gaggle that's been gathered outside the hospital here ever since.
I think a lot of people, and myself included, are curious as to what exactly that looks like there, because there's so many people who want information. At the same time, you can't just manufacture, information about what is going on. Things take time, and when there is something to pass along, it will happen. So in between that happening, what does it look like down where you are?
They've got the media across the street from the hospital itself. And so when players or family members, when they come in, they sort of duck through. They can come out and talk to us if they want to, but they can kind of sneak through and not have to deal with us. There's a memorial, there's a vigil that it's hard to describe, but people are leaving candles, cards across the street from the hospital as well. So that's kind of where all the media has been gathered. And so that's when we've been talking to people who have been, a lot of people say they just wanted to do something. They wanted to show their support somehow, even if they don't know Hamlin, they still wanted to do something to honor him, to let his family know that at this point, it's not Bengals versus Bills anymore. It's we're all in this together.
Alan, you're outside the hospital, and right after this happened, right after DeMar got to the hospital, we kept hearing about this press conference that is yet to happen. Are you hearing anything? Are we going to find out more today? Are we going to hear from personnel at the hospital today? What have you heard?
Hamlin's uncle actually did come out, and he talked to us for a little bit last night. He said he gave us an update Hamlin is trending upward, is the phrase that he used. But he said he's still heavily sedated, no idea yet when he'll be able to start thinking about recovery, when he'll be able to get out of here. But he said he's still heavily sedated, saying that because of the amount of CPR, you might have seen the video from that game on the field there, that they were doing CPR for so long. And he said that he went into cardiac arrest when he got to the hospital, too, so they had to do CPR again. So he said like the one of the biggest issues right now is damage to his lungs because of all the CPR they had to do to keep him alive. He said, if not for the doctors and for the paramedics, though, he doesn't know if Hamlin would still be with us. And so he said he's grateful to the people of Cincinnati, to the doctors here. But yeah, it's going to be a long road to recovery, but he is, in his words, trending upward.
Speaking with Alan Skaya's with KRLD Radio and is in Cincinnati. And Alan, I was down there for the game and was there, the day before. And the one thing that I was saying, my friends who were there with me, that we were saying was that, wow, everyone's so nice here. Like, it's really great people around this town. And they were so nice to us and to all the Bills fans who were down there for the game. And I feel like you're still seeing that outside of the facility where Hamlin is, that you have such a nice city of people looking to in any way kind of show their support.
One of the things I noticed in that first vigil Monday night and then at the one last night too is that it was people wearing Bengals jerseys standing arm in arm with people in Bills jerseys too. And there's one woman I talked to yesterday. She said, it's like, I hate the Bills on the field right now, right? Like once the rivalry starts, I hate the Bills again. but right now here, and this is real life, we all love each other right now. And I think that's one of the messages that, people here want to send, is that, you know, for as hot as this rivalry has gotten in a very short amount of time, you know, you've got two teams having a great season, but right now they're putting all that aside because they need to focus on the person who's inside the hospital right now.
Any organized events outside the hospital? You know, we've seen the prayer vigils. We've seen people show up. Any organized events for today to bring people back together across the street from the hospital?
You know, I haven't seen anything organized for today just yet, but that might happen. A lot of these have been coming on in short succession. And so if something does happen, it might be just kind of a spur of the moment thing.
I understand the Bengals are going to have their first full day back. I'm not sure, practice or what exactly they'll be doing, but they're at least kind of gathering and doing a walkthrough and expected to play again Sunday. I know players have been down there by the stadium. I just, that's got to be so tough to be, you know, maybe any NFL player, but especially one who was on the field and watching that whole situation kind of go out. Is anything being said over what to expect and what these players or teams are saying about going forward?
You know, trying to get these players back focused again because of, like what you said, what they've all gone through, what they've all seen, I would suspect today might be a lighter practice where they all can kind of just sort of get back into the swing of things. But part of them, too, they might want to move on. They might want something that can take their mind off of what happened, being on the field there with them that night. So it might be kind of a balance they're trying to strike, that they do want to recognize that Hamlin is still in the hospital, that a guy who they all know is struggling right now, but they also might just want something that can take their mind off it. The NFL commissioner did say that this game is not going to be made up this week, that the Week 18 schedule is not going to be affected, but they're not going to try to make up this game before the Bengals and Bills move on this Sunday.
Well, Alan, really do appreciate you taking the time to join us this morning, and you know, glad to have you down there. Alan Skaya with KRLDs in Cincinnati, down by the stadium, and appreciate it. Thanks so much, and maybe we'll talk with you again soon. I think it's a tough situation. I did want to, you know, hit this at some point. Maybe now is the best point to do it, Joe. And we were talking about this a little bit, you know, before we came on the air. Because I've seen so much. To give you an example, I was very much out of the loop. I thought it was funny. You know, I was on here yesterday morning on over at WGR, and they wanted to talk with me about what it was like in the stadium. And I understand that part of it. You want to see, like, what the atmosphere was like, how people were reacting to that. On the same hand, I was maybe the least informed person. You know, myself and anybody who was there had no idea what was really going on. You barely had, you know what it's like inside of a big crowded, you go to the arena, you go to the stadium, you don't really have cell reception that well, there's so many people there. So no one really knew what was going on at the time. And then, you know, as information started to filter out and, you know, we kind of got this, I was kind of stunned to see what was going on TV when we ended up making our way, walking back to where we were staying. And, you know, they've got people obviously talking about the situation. And I'll see this from time to time about how somebody will be, oh, did you see what, you know, so-and-so said, or, you know, some media personality, or how could you be so insensitive about this? I just think it's a really rough situation to be in. These people who are on TV or commentating 24/7 about a situation that, Joe, honestly, what is there to say?
Right. I mean,
what is there to say other than, I hope at the end of this person is okay.
Yes.
And that's all you can say. So, you know, when you have media people or whoever else, they're kind of forced to talk about this more and more. And, you know, at some point in the last 48 hours of nonstop talking about something when there is nothing to say, they'll probably say something stupid at some point.
Right.
And I, I have a hard time kind of faulting that because they're put in a bad position. And the same thing kind of goes for all the comments. You know, I see the texts coming through. You see the internet comments like, oh, well, this or that means that's good news, or oh, that or that doesn't sound like that's a good sign, or something like that. You don't know anything, and nobody knows anything. And there is no point in speculating about what this potentially means for recovery or what it doesn't mean or anything like that. I really would like if people could just kind of understand that when there is an update to pass along, it will be conveyed to people.
Yeah.
Instead of just kind of going through this endless, oh, what does that mean? What does this mean? Is it looking, you know, how is he this hour or that hour? There are some things, and I understand people have a constant need for the latest information, the refresh. You have the phone right available to you in your pocket. There are some things that you can just kind of wait. And we all want to hear something positive. We're all hoping to hear some sort of good news, but you don't have to force it. You know, that will hopefully come when it comes. And I don't know, like this constant speculation about what these little tidbits of news mean. It gets to me sometimes, you know, reading the comments that people put out.
Right. I mean, the only people that know what's going on are the people who are there treating DeMar Hamlin. And when they have news to tell us, they'll tell us. I mean, I believe me, Brian, I am probably the most guilty of clicking the refresh button on Twitter, hoping to see some updated news, you know, hoping to see something. But when they have the news, believe me, they will let us know, probably in that press conference they've been talking about. I do want to ask you, and I know you've done a lot of talking about being there, but being at the stadium, you know, because on TV, obviously the players are all around. You saw nothing that was going on the field. When did you, or did you, looking down on the field, being there in the stadium, get this feeling of, okay, this isn't normal? What was the first sign of, well, this isn't normal, this isn't what I usually see?
I mean, it took a long time. It took a long, because you're so used to seeing it, right? I mean, you are used to. I was there with my friend who's a high school football coach, and at one of his games that I went to this past year, there was a student on the field who was taken in an ambulance. I don't know what exactly happened, some sort of injury, but he was taken away in an ambulance at a high school game, and then they continued on playing. You've become so desensitized to that type of scene. It takes a long time, you know, without the benefit of, I think everyone at home, they were showing the shots, and then you see the players' faces that, you know, kind of conveyed a different type of emotion,
right,
than what you would normally see. Without that, it all kind of blended in. It wasn't until, like, okay, this is going on for a while. This is pretty serious. And then, right, somebody I had, you know, down a few rows, I think below us, seen, oh, he collapsed and, you know, had a video that was watching it on their phone and saying, oh, you know, he kind of collapse the ground. And that's when, you know, it kind of like clicks and you go into that like 1,000-yard stare mode, like, oh, you know, this is not something you've ever seen before, not anything you would have ever expected. It really was kind of surreal to, you know, be in that stadium that is just the loudest place you've ever been, and 10 minutes later, to kind of go into this silent confusion type of mode that I will not forget.
Oh, yeah.
You know, anytime soon. And you were at something similar.
Richard Zednik, and that is something I'll never forget. You know, you talk about the silence of the stadium. The silence of the arena is something I will never forget. When I walk into that arena, that building, every time I think back to 08, Richard Zednik, and just the stream of blood that was on the ice, and very similar. Now, again, that didn't last as long because Richard Zednik was going off the ice when, you know, and they chased him into the locker room and did work on him and got him to the hospital. But it was so quiet in that building, even when play resumed, that quietness, that just eerie silence stayed. It's something that will always stay with me.
And you said to me yesterday when I was talking to you on the phone, and you mentioned that, you know, I'd imagine it was kind of similar. And I just said, like, I don't think so, only because you knew what was going on. I mean, you could kind of clearly see everyone in that building kind of had a clear idea of what happened.
Yeah.
You know, he was cut by a skate blade. In this, no one, at least who I was near in that building, really had any idea of what had happened and what was going on. And still, the walking out of the building, I think there was still a lot of that confusion and, you know, now all of a sudden a game is canceled, which never happens. I mean, it never happens.
Never happened. I mean, the Zednik game wasn't canceled. They went and kept on playing.
People have been paralyzed on a football field. They continue the game. It never happens. I think people were just kind of stunned and, you know, a real level of worry of, you know, what did we just see here? Walking out of that stadium that, like I said, just an hour or so before was one of the all-time great environments that I can remember being in, of just everyone being so happy, so arm in arm with each other. What he was saying about Bengals and Bills fans together, that was, it's not just the case because of this. I mean, that was the case the entire weekend that I was there. Everyone joking with each other, having a good time, to all of a sudden that. Not something I will soon forget.
I mean, the change in the mood and the focus of the game, you know, for 4 hours, from 2 to 6, I was talking about how amped for the game I was, Brian, how this is the most important Monday night game. And, you know, in an instant, it went from, oh my gosh, the game, to, I don't care about the game. Let's worry about DeMar Hamlin and his recovery.
And it catches you so off guard because you're walking in there, and throughout the weekend you have like an idea of the possible outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, what's a possible outcome of what you're going to see? Well, you know, the Bills could get blown out in this game. You know, it could be a tight one, could be really exciting. You know, we could win. It'll be a great thing. You know, we'll be all happy on the drive home. This doesn't even come into the realm of things that you would be expecting to happen as you go to a football game.
No, not at all.
I think that's everybody at that game had that similar, you know, what confusion and just kind of a stunned look about them over what just happened here.
You know, you mentioned the Bengals doing a walkthrough or getting together as a team today, right, at the stadium. And Alan mentioned it. Do you think that's where a lot of players are? I mean, try to put yourself in a player's mindset of this, hey, let's get on the field, let's play for DeMar, let's get out there, let's get back to some sense of normalcy. Do you think that's on the minds of some of the players here in Buffalo?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you want to get back to some sense of normalcy. But, you know, I don't know. The play for DeMar, you know, anytime somebody gets in, you kind of always hear that, right? You know, let's play it for him. Like, I feel like that falls pretty flat on, you know, a lot of levels, given the weight of the situation that played out right in front of you. You know, I can't imagine, after kind of seeing what it was like down on the field, even the thought of getting back and playing that game or playing any time, right? In the near future.
There's no way they would have gotten back on that field and been able to play.
But it would be the same thing, right, if that happened in your office. I mean, if that happened where you work or any other part of your day, like, then you kind of, what do you, go about your business? Yeah. You know, do you return to work right away, like, as if this never happened? It's impossible to do that.
Yeah.
Be talking more about this and taking your calls at 803-0930 when we get back. BMaz and Beamer on WBEN. So we're back here, Brian Mazeroski and Joe Beamer on WBEN. There is an update to, you know, here as I'm saying, you know, the updates. They'll be there when it becomes available. But to kind of clarify, and this is part of why I get bothered with, like, the constant, like, any little bit of information goes out there and then it gets often misinterpreted, right? Or maybe miscommunicated and gives people perhaps the wrong impression.
Right.
I like to avoid that kind of stuff, but this is being reported from Coley Harvey, who's an ESPN reporter, that there is some clarification. That there had been some miscommunication in terms of the number of times Damar Hamlin was resuscitated. And they said there was only one instance of that happening. That was at the stadium.
Okay.
Where it had been reported that it happened multiple times at the hospital. But this is kind of the, when you're relying on, you know, impromptu spokespeople, right? I mean, somebody who was not supposed to be in this position, you know, hours ago. Now, all of a sudden, I'm the point person for the national media looking for information about the family, and you're still confused, right, about what's going on, that this type of miscommunication can happen. But they did say, and this is Jordan Rooney, who is kind of this spokesperson acting as such over the last 48 hours, that the family says doctors got promising news overnight on the condition. So that is good news, right? And it will bring you any updates. But I do want to caution people about overreacting to bits of information. Yep. Or speculation that's out there because, right, this is the type of thing that can happen. A little bit of miscommunication or something that gets misinterpreted, and all of a sudden you kind of have one feeling over another that might be a little misguided, and kind of hoping to you know, go against that. The first responder, it never ceases to amaze me how quick to action people are, how they're able to identify what's happening and know the correct course of action in under a minute's time, and then act to give hopefully life-saving treatment in just such a boom, boom, boom. And I brought this up as we were talking with Dan Everett Jr., who kind of, you know, goes through a lot of these training exercises, right? Erie County Emergency Services Commissioner, just about how even the skill to recognize what's happening on the field. People fall down on football fields all the time, right? I mean, we see it, like, oftentimes for nothing. Like, it could be a leg cramp,
yeah.
You know, and somebody would go down, just like, hang on, pause this. We need some sort of attention or just to hold on for a second. And for somebody to be watching from the sideline, you know, all this commotion being going on, to watch it from the sidelines and to, you know, recognize somebody going down is more than just a leg cramp or something else that you are more used to seeing that happens every single game, right? That you would have every reason to believe would be the case. To recognize it as something more serious, to kind of have that diagnosis, right, of sorts, and go and give that life-saving assistance, it amazes me, and it really does make you think twice. And we were, I think it was maybe the day that you were out Friday last week, Joe, or in later in the day, and I took a call from somebody when we were talking about people in the blizzard situation and how there's certain training that you can go through, whether it's CPR or just other kind of like survival training, that's just so good to have for yourself or for somebody else. You know, if you're in a blizzard situation, you see your neighbor is out there next to you shoveling snow and the worst happens, to be able to go in and provide some sort of care when you're not easily able to get there is, I mean, it's an amazing skill to have. And I feel like this and the blizzard situation might be making people think a little bit more about seeking that out.
I'm telling you, I said yesterday, this one of the first things I saw on Twitter was, you know, this should be the push for everyone to go and get CPR certification. And Brian, I have to be honest, it's something I never thought about in my life. But you know what? Why not? Why not go get the certification? And not only so I have it if something shall happen to in a situation I'm in, but hopefully more and more people get it in case something happens to me in a situation I'm in and I need that life-saving help given. So I yesterday we talked about this, and I have looked at a few upcoming classes, and Brian, I think I'm going to go in, and I urge everyone, it's cheap, and really it could be between life and death.
803-0930, if this is you, or if there's advice to somebody out there who's looking to learn a little bit more, to equip themselves, to potentially save somebody, a stranger, a family member, if the worst were to happen, if a freak accident like what we saw, right, on the field on Monday night were to happen. And I got a little bit of insight into this. And it was interesting to me because you keep on hearing about first aid classes, you know, actual certifications, you know, things that lifeguards need. And it can sound pretty daunting. We see the defibrillator devices everywhere now. I mean, it's so different than when we were kids. I mean, yeah. I never saw that. They're in every building.
We've got one here.
On every floor, you know, in every separate office. They're everywhere, and it still does seem, I think, a little daunting to a lot of people to, well, you know, a whole certification, like, this is a lot of information to take in. Am I able to do it? You know, this, they look at the defibrillator as this kind of complex piece of equipment that I don't want to misuse.
Yes.
Right? That I'm scared I would do more damage.
But more reason to take the class, so you don't.
Sure, but even without that, in speaking, we were talking with the American Heart Association earlier this morning, and then getting some of the comments in from people who were texting in 803-0930. It doesn't seem as daunting as people were describing the defibrillators as almost foolproof, the way that they have the instructions, in some cases, speaking out to you on the device, listed right there exactly where to place it, how to use it, so you can kind of be sure you're not causing more damage. And then with the American Heart Association talking about CPR, they're like, yeah, it's great, you know, take a CPR class. Like, I wish everyone was certified. But even if you don't want to do that, to watch like a 2-minute video, and you don't have to learn the entire process to be able to be helpful in an emergency situation. A compression-only CPR to the beat of a song that you know and can learn in a quick 2 minutes, just to kind of be there. I think a lot more people would be looking for that. And I think it was nice to know that it's not as inaccessible as you might think. You don't have to have a trained person on hand to be able to do this. And that's kind of new information, I think, to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, I I think more and more people are going to go seek that training, Brian. But yes, it is refreshing to know, okay, this isn't impossible. It's not impossible to use the defibrillator if you need to. And this morning from the American Heart Association, one of the songs, Hips Don't Lie by Shakira, you can use in compression CPR. So that's all good information that we got to get out there. And I think this has pushed a lot of people to getting that information, Brian, watching those videos that you're talking about. And because what have we heard about DeMar Hamlin's situation? You know, his life was saved because people who knew what they were doing were able to get to him within seconds. And as you said, there was no, oh, what do we do? What do we do? They knew exactly what they had to do. And they went right to it and got right to work. And that is why he is on this path to recovery today. And I just hope this pushes more people to at least look into it. As you said, Brian, get this information so you can use the tools that we have if needed. If it's you and someone else, and that someone else needs that help, it'd be very nice to at least know what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the latest information is kind of clarifying some misinformation that was out there, things that weren't things that were not communicated the same. And this coming from a report this morning that according to DeMar's family, doctors got some promising news overnight, and the reports, and it's not just a report, I think it actually came from a family member outside of the hospital who said that he had to be resuscitated multiple times, that was not necessarily the case. Only one instance of that happening, and that was at the stadium. And I'm thinking again that that's just a clarification out there, and they wanted to get out news that could be seen as positive, which is, again, great to hear. I've seen a lot, Joe, of people kind of, once again, you're bringing into, and for years this was mostly talking about head injuries, but the violence in football, and is the sport too violent? And I think what's strange about this is that what happened on the field is almost like a freak accident.
Yes.
You know, you hear a doctor describe it, and it's a millisecond here or there would have had no outcome. Right? It would not have had this impact, likely, if you listen to what doctors are saying. And to me, it's that what we were talking about in the first segment, it's not so much the incident on the field, but the reaction to it that would bring me to this, you know, violent aspect of this. The immediate reaction to even seeing an ambulance come on the field is nonchalant. I think for a lot of people, as I was looking around the stadium of everybody watching this before you were able to grasp the severity, it was almost par for the course.
Yeah, there was an ambulance the last time the Bills were on a Monday night game.
Right. That part gets a little troubling. You know, when you really think about that, like, what was my reaction when I saw the ambulance on the field? It was, well, I'm sure it'll be okay. Because that's what always happens.
Yep.
It's what always seems to happen.
You know, this sucks. I feel awful, but I'm sure he's going to go get the best help and he'll be okay.
And you're almost conditioned to, well, he'll be okay. Because it always happens. You'll always hear the news that he's going to be okay. And to not get that was, I think, the shocking part of this whole thing. And to have that reaction in the first place. Like, maybe there is something to the sport being too violent, or you know, to that point. And I don't really know how you've changed that at all.
You know, isn't it interesting? Because growing up, yeah, football is a contact sport. You know, I mean, the point is to play until someone's down on the ground. But Brian, I feel like when I was a kid, maybe this is just me. Hockey was always the one that people were saying was, you know, that's a real violent sport, right? You get someone, you throw them into the boards, you know. You know, and that was the sport. Oh gosh, you know, the stop sign on the jersey, on the back of your jersey. This is the real violent sport. But football, it is a violent sport. I mean, that, again, the point of the game is to play until someone is on the ground, that's the point of the game. It is a violent sport. And hey, we've taken a lot of measures to make it safer, obviously with pads and helmets and everything. It is a violent sport. The problem is, as you said, with the hit that that put Damar Hamlin down, it just looked like your everyday hit, right? I mean, it looked like nothing special or nothing more severe than the play before. And I think that's what's got a lot of people questioning, you know. And as you said, doctors have said this is that one millisecond off. If it was any other time, he would have gotten up, we'd be playing. It's just any hit, I guess. But I mean, do you change football? Is that the call?
I don't know. I don't know what the proper reaction to. And that's what I think a lot of people were struggling with and brought up in the last segment. You know, people who they were criticized for talking about the game. You know, will the game be played? Will the game be made up? And I won't criticize anybody who's talking about that or looking at it through that lens, because you don't know what to. I mean, this whole thing is unprecedented almost. Yes. In modern times, right?
We've never been here before.
It is not something you're used to seeing. And even in instances where, you mentioned Christian Eriksen, who I know Dr. Metchler mentioned yesterday here, who just a couple years ago collapsed on the field. A similar cardiac event, had to be resuscitated on the field in front of millions of people watching. Even that, just a couple hours later, you got a photo of him in the hospital, doing the... can't remember if it was the thumbs up but you had this sense very quickly after that, okay, it's, things are going to be okay at the end. And you kind of move on past that.
Yeah. Chris Pronger took a slap shot in 98. He was tweeting about that yesterday.
And in all these cases, you got a pretty speedy resolution. You had at least some sense that things were going to be okay pretty quickly after it happened. And then you kind of moved on. And I think as of right now, like everyone's just on pause.
Because they want that.
Until you have that sense of resolution, right, that you can kind of move on from, that comfort of positive news. I don't know how you move on. So it is kind of tough to talk. It is tough to figure out what they're going to do next, right, where they're going to go. But I find it hard to fault anybody for going in any direction, right? Because it is such a confusing, unprecedented situation.
And yeah, I keep on saying when we get that positive news, I do think it'll not make me easier, because obviously, I mean, Sunday, people are going to be thinking about this. Obviously, this is what people are going to be thinking about when they think about this season. They will be thinking about what happened on Monday. But I think people are really just waiting, as you said, Brian, for that positive news. And this idea that football is violent, again, it's the game. Again, the point is to play until someone's on the ground. But think of the four major sports in America, and throw soccer in there, too. This could have happened in any of the five sports. You know what I mean? This could have happened in any sport.
It has.
Right. It's happened with baseball. It's happened in hockey. It's happened in soccer. I'm sure there's a story in basketball. But it's happened in every sport. It's not a football-specific thing. I think that is a point that needs to be made as well.
Yeah. If the conversation goes that way, the violence of... I don't know if you can look at this one incident. I would look at the reaction, right, to what happened, the reaction to seeing people rush over to somebody's aid, the reaction to seeing an ambulance, that it would take minutes after the sight of an ambulance for you to kind of say, oh, this is serious. Like that in and of itself kind of is enough to give you a little bit of pause.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was surreal. It is nothing I think I'll ever forget, is just the swing of emotions, the walking out of that stadium, right? And just kind of seeing everybody's face so happy. Just a few short moments ago, walking out in confusion, just very silent. in that long walk out of the stadium. Can't say enough, though, about the people all weekend long. Again, I mentioned it with our guest earlier in the show. The people of Cincinnati are great. I think the Bills are there next year, if I know the schedule right. I would recommend it to everybody. You know, we drove. It's, you know, a flight might be a little easier to handle given the weather, or, you know, but the people were great. They remind me a lot of us. They remind me a lot of Bills fans. Super friendly to everybody. They know how to have a good time and support their team and really welcome you with open arms. You could tell they enjoyed the rivalry, and they reminded me a lot of the Bills, Joe, because like us, they didn't take being good for granted, is how I would describe kind of their attitude toward it. They were happy to have this game that mattered. And I think happy to have it against the Bills, you know, another team who has kind of long been an afterthought and now all of a sudden is right in the middle of the big stage. Happy to, right, have that here and share it with Bills fans. I thought that was really cool. It was on display all weekend. It's on display right now with the continued outpouring of support. And during the situation, as everyone was so understanding. I don't know if you get that everywhere. You know, if you go to another city, if they, you know, such a hyped up game and they tell everybody to go home, I don't know if you get that reaction everywhere. That reaction of like, yeah, like we completely understand, and we'll walk out with you. Like, that's tough. Talking to every Bills fan and, you know, trying to make sense of it all. I think you go to a lot of places and you might get like, oh, come on, you can't be serious. Like, get them back on the field or something like that. I really do think that would be the response in a lot of other places, but not there. It was a great town, and I would recommend to anybody looking to go there next year, or, you know, kind of thinking about that.
Yeah, and we thank Cincinnati, you know, for our second night, Brian. They lit up the city blue and red for the Bills as well. Keep it here. We'll have, as the updates come in on DeMar Hamlin, we will bring them to you. David Bellavia is next. B-Maz and Beamer will be back tomorrow at 9 o'clock here on News Radio 930 WBEN.